Got you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
We'll give it a few more minutes if that's all right with you.
It is.
Good evening. Please join me in saying the Anabakoa. Anabakoa. Idula to me. verse we say in a whisper. I'm reading from a verse in the Zohar from the Parsha of Ekev, reading from section 3, the mouth of two witnesses. I'm reading verse 9. I'm sorry. I'm reading from section 4, verse 75. And as for the likenesses of their face, they had the face of a man. Vayhino amadunai Eloheinu aleinu maaseyadenu p'nenei aleinu maaseyadenu p'neneihu. Kurseya katsalka rishi ma'akiyarba deyukin eilin eilin arba. Excuse me. Mahan Elaim Nadlin Lehai Kursit Seya the Kursaya Ithalal Behu Ad Dinakta Belakta Inun Inugin the Kisupin Nahata Malya Ilana Dimale Anfim Lekol Sitar Umalya Ivim Kevan Dinachata Dinfaku Eilim Dalet Diuknim Metsuyarin Betsuyuaihu Kalifin Menachet Ram Betzitzan Melachatan Ve'inun Zarin Zara Al Alma. When the throne ascends, it is marked in these four shapes. These four lofty names bear this throne, and the throne is composed of them until the throne recedes and collects these pleasures and delights. Afterwards, the throne descends fully laden, like a tree full with branches in every direction and loaded with fruits. And the throne descends. The four forms of the living creatures come out formed, engraved, illuminating, glittering, and glowing. And they sow seeds over the world. This pasuk is reinforcing the idea of what happens with the blessings. And we've gone over that with one section during Akev. We did it last Saturday night, and we'll also reinforce it with some other meditations this tomorrow night. Does anyone have any questions? Well, I have three questions that were sent to me. So they're rather short, but let's hope it will solicit some other questions or prompt some other thoughts for other questions. The first question I received was, since most of the of this generation comes from the left heel of Adam and Chava. What is the correction of that generation? And one of the things that we need to understand before I answer the question is that every generation has a joint tikkun. Now, what is every generation? There is a machloket, an argument for the sake of heaven, as to how many years is a generation. Some say 20, some say 70, some say 50, some say 10. Essentially, these numbers are relating to different aspects of the Sefirot. As an example, 50 is relating to Bina because it's dealing with the Jubilee. 70 is relating to the 70 nations, so it's the seven lower Sefirot in its complete structure of the 10 within each of them. But each person has multiple generations that they are born into, multiple tikkunim for that generation. Now, what is the tikkunim? Is it part of Adam's sin, or is it something else? We know that each human soul commits sins in a lifetime, and those sins must be corrected. And we also know that each human soul has tikkun, corrections, that are associated with the sin of Adam and Chava. But what is the sin of the generation connected to? And this is the idea of correcting what Adam and Chava would have achieved had they kept the one mitzvah that they were given. Do not eat from the tree of knowledge, good and evil. Had they kept that, they would have risen. They would have elevated. The correction of the generations is relating to that. It has a connection to the sin because it wasn't completed. But the correction is somewhat related to teshuvah for that sin, and somewhat related to what was going to take place had they kept that mitzvah. Because there are the 7,000 years, as we have spoken many times, and then there is the 8,000, 9,000, and 10,000 years, the higher Sefirot. And all of that is interrelated. So many generations, the generation of the desert, the generation of the flood, many generations have part of the correction of Adam and Chava. Being from the left heel, and as I wrote about talking about Ekev, which means heel, although in this parasha, it doesn't speak about the heel. It's translated in a totally different way. But if we look at a heel, our own heel, the heel of the foot, we see a number of issues. One issue that we see is, where is the heel? Is it on the bottom of the foot, or is it on the back of the foot, the opposite side of the toes? We see the heel. Is it the bone, or is it the muscle, or is it both? The essence of the heel is both muscle and bone. It is both the bottom of the foot and the back of the foot. The heel is the foundation of the body. And as such, that heel, us, when we were in Adam and Chava, had the obligation to fall down, to not support the body, not let it move. Now, what would have happened had we not supported the body? That clearly was our job. Why did we not do what I'm talking about now? For the same reason that military people in the modern age are taught, if the order you're being given is not legal, do not follow it. And that only happened since the Second World War, because the Nazi excuse at the Nuremberg trial, the Nazi explanation was, we were following orders. That is the tikkun of the generation of the left heel, the support of the body, the support of the desire. Are there any questions? The second question I received tonight, or before the class, I do appreciate everyone who sends class questions before, because it gives me some time to prepare. Although mostly I don't prepare, I just kind of have some thoughts about what I will say in answer to the question. So the question is, do non-Jews go through the beating of the grave? And I'll ask the question, why wouldn't they? They are connected to the physical world. Hopefully more so than the Jewish soul, but it's not necessarily true. But every non-Jew has a desire to receive. He is created as a desire to receive, just as the Jewish soul. And he is living in the body for the same number of years. And he is going to be connected and have this relationship with the body. And this is the reason for the beating of the grave, the chibut hakever, because the soul needs to be separated from the body. And this relationship between the body and the soul is comfortable in the body. Not 100% comfortable, because it knows it needs to return to Hashem, needs to go to the Garden of Eden. But at the same time, it enjoys the pleasures that the body receives. And that's why the soul is returned to the body for the beating. Because the purpose of the beating is to remove the connection to physicality. And so the answer to your question is non-Jews do go through the beating of the grave. But their desire to receive is lessened. And therefore the beating is not as severe. It doesn't take as much to separate the physicality and the desire for the illusion of the physicality from that particular soul. Are there any questions?
This is Ruby. I have a question or two.
Go ahead.
Okay, so the first stage is separating the soul from the body. Is that correct?
Not the first stage. The first stage is for the soul. There's three levels of soul, so to speak. There's the neshama, the ruach, and the nefesh. So the first stage is for the neshama to leave the body and return to the Garden of Eden. The second stage is for the ruach to see the light of the Shekhinah and become so enamored with the beauty of this light that it will voluntarily leave the body.
Okay.
And then the 7 days of Shiva, which is the mourning period for the 7 days after the body has been buried, that Ruach has been put back into the body and now needs to have the physicality, the dust, the desire for the physicality removed from it. And at the same time, the body needs to receive its share of the suffering, pain, whatever we want to call it, because the body is obviously dead. But the idea that both the body and the soul participated in all of the mistakes that were made. The body should not have done it. The soul should have been able to control the body, but it did not. So they both have their share of the experience, the purpose of which is to remove the soul from the body again, as well as to remove the soul from the dust of the earth, the dust of physicality, the desire for its physicality from the soul, which is the Ruach. And
okay. The
Nefesh never leaves the body until the body is totally decomposed. Or, in the case of a righteous person, that body doesn't decompose. And the Nefesh knows to leave because it was disconnected before it went into the grave. It knows that the physicality is an illusion. It lives like the physicality is an illusion. And its connection to the body is much less.
Is there
question, or do you have more?
I do have another question. Yeah, you've answered part of it. The cleansing by fire, I mean, is that for every soul? Is that, or is that for every soul? Is the length of time the same?
Well, the term cleansing by fire is not necessarily accurate. It's
okay.
Shibuta Kever is the beating in the grave. And it is thought of and described as being swords of fire. That is what takes, and the soul feels the pain of that. You know, it's a metaphor, but it's also, you know, real. So your question is on the Kibbutz Kever, the beating in the grave. Your question is what?
Well, the length of time that the soul goes through that process. And I guess I'm asking you if you have a person that is considered a Zadig versus someone that is not.
So the Zadig does not necessarily go through the Chibuta Kever.
Okay.
It depends on the level of their life, in their life, the extent of their connection to be a Zadig, and how much they cleanse in the process of life. So they may not have to go through it, but for the most part, 99% of the people in the earth go through it.
That answered my question. And then my second question has to do with Adam and Chava. When they were created, were they created in flesh, or were they created in some type of life force energy? Without a body, without a fleshly body.
There's differences of opinion on that. So I'm going to tell you what I understand from my reading of the Zohar in various sections.
Okay.
Adam and Chava were created in a spiritual world. As a spiritual being, their skin was light. They had no digestive system. They were created together, back to back, which means that the spines of them, for lack of a better description, whatever was the support of their body, was created together, attached together. Chava looking in one direction and Adam looking in the other direction. That's why people do not have eyes in the back of their head. When Hashem separated the two and took Chava out of Adam and put them next to each other, side by side, their skin was light. Their skin was translucent, like our fingernails and toenails.
Okay.
And for them to absorb energy, to absorb eating, so to speak, they did this in the frame of, they would look at something and they would absorb its energy through their skin. They did not have to chew. They did not have to do any of those actions that we call eating and digestion.
Okay.
But they were created to eventually be in the physical world. And in this spiritual world, there were beings which later came to be called watchers. In the Sefer Yetzirah, they're referred to as Tali. In Daniel, they're called Yerim, which means watchers.
Mm-hmm.
They are a race of angels that is a snake-like race. But they are humanoid in that they walk and stand upright. And in the garden, there were these watchers. And one of them, the head one, was given the order, and he seduced Chava, and his female partner seduced Adam. And it was at that point that they fell to the physical world, but hadn't really lost all of the capabilities and did not yet have the full digestive system. It was a combination kind of thing. And then when Adam did not do teshuvah, which God asked him to do, hinted to him to do by the question, where are you? Ayecha, which is similar to or exactly the word that lamentation starts with, Ayecha, it's really God was saying, where are you spiritually? What is your level? How did this happen? And if Adam had done teshuvah at that point, had said to God, I blew it, please forgive me, then Adam would have been restored. And Adam and Chava would have been restored. But Adam, out of his fear and not understanding the system because he was a newborn, even if he was 100 feet tall, his response was, the woman made me do it, pointing outside of himself, not accepting his own responsibility. And that's what completed their being physical beings. And then they were expelled from the Garden of Eden, which is in one of the inner earths, which represents an inner dimension or another dimension of our physical world. That's my understanding. It doesn't mean it's correct. It doesn't mean there aren't other opinions that are just as valid or more valid. Every person, and this is what I always teach, every person in our generation has to accept their responsibility and strive to understand what the most that they can understand and make decisions, the free choice decisions in this life.
I have another question.
Go ahead.
The reptilians that you just described, were they of the same substance or light force energy as Adam and Kyle?
They still are. They were given the responsibility. They live in the frame that we call Keter of Malchut. They're given the responsibility to keep mankind on track to the plan of creation. Man has free choice.
Mm-hmm.
They motivate him to maintain it through his free choice, the plan of creation. Because free choice without that watching, without that guidance, could very easily destroy the world, destroy mankind. That's just going back, you know. Go ahead.
Are they to materialize?
Say again, you broke up.
Are they able to materialize? I mean, can they be seen? Can they take like a humanoid form today?
I wouldn't recommend you strive to see them. The answer is yes. Sometimes they take humanoid form. They take human form, and sometimes they don't. They just move quicker. In our physical universe, we have a speed of light limitation of 186,000 miles per second. And their universe is 186,001 mile per second. So they can move quite quickly. So we're not allowed to see, you know, we normally do not see them. If you do meet them, it's not necessarily a positive thing.
Okay.
And in that context, I recommend a book by Rabbi Barstock called Protection from Evil. And that will help you understand the whole overall system.
Okay. That answered my question.
Any other questions? The last
Hello?
Question that I have. Yes, go ahead.
Please say the name of the rabbi again for the book.
His website is koshertorah.com. His name is Rabbi Ariel Bar Sadok. TZADOK. He is one of my teachers. I have many teachers. He's a left column individual. I've had students try and reach him, and for whatever reason, if he feels it's not appropriate, he doesn't return calls.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Are there any other questions? The last question that I received prior to the class is: the piece of challah given to the satan on Shabbat to be disposed of immediately or after the meal? And then there goes on with some other questions related to that answer. So let's start with the background. When someone says the blessing on the challah, the first piece is given to the satan. It's not given any salt. It is put on the table in a place that people know it's not to be eaten. If you want to remove it at that time, if somebody is leaving the table to go get some part of the dinner, it would be a good thing to take it off the table, because it is possible that somebody forgets that this feast sitting on the table is not to be eaten. And literally you are injecting into yourself the energy of Satan, because the kavanah of the person saying the blessing was literally to give this and inject that negative consciousness to the piece of bread. So please make sure that it gets removed from the table. Now, what is going to happen to that? You can either throw it into the garbage at that point, or you can put it aside and throw it into a place that is not going to be eaten. Not even by birds, not animals. It is the Satan has no continuity. His desire, his essence, is the desire to receive for oneself alone. And so the piece of bread has that same essence and should not be put in a place where it can be utilized in any continuity context. So normally in our household, we just throw it into the garbage and we remove it from the table as quickly as possible, but nobody makes a special effort to get up and throw it away. If you're getting up to go leave the table to go wash hands, you know, somebody will pick it up and put it in the garbage.
Okay, so we could put maybe put like a napkin, and then that piece would be put on the napkin, and then whoever gets up can pick it up with the napkin and put it in the trash can.
Yes, along with the napkin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If after the meal, where does one place this piece? As I said, it goes into the garbage. It goes into a place where there is no continuity connected to it. Now, does this apply to the second meal and the third meals as well? And the answer to that is, in my opinion, it applies to every meal where you break bread. Every meal that you are saying Hamotzi, washing beforehand, saying Hamotzi, and saying the Berkat Hamazon afterwards. If you have an uncut piece of bread, if you have a whole bread, the first piece goes to the Satan. If you are eating a sandwich that has, it's been cut, there's no need to do that because it's already connected to the negative system because it's been separated. But
if your sandwich is whole, you break a piece off?
If your sandwich isn't whole, if it's two slices of bread.
Okay.
If you're like my father, who used to, I don't know if it was joking or real, he was this large man, even larger than I was, and he used to, you know, put a half a pound or a pound of salami on one slice of bread, and he would say he was dieting because he only had one slice instead of two. But the fact that it was a slice would indicate that he did not need to break off a piece. But sometimes he did, he'd take a Kaiser roll and he would place the meat of his sandwich on the flat side of the Kaiser roll, and he'd then eat the roll without cutting it, and then it would need to be done that way.
Mm.
But let me really confuse you, because the rabbis are very clear. If you are having bread at a meal, you need to wash and say hamotzi. There is a minority opinion expressed in the Talmud that relates separately from that discussion, and it relates to the idea that the way you order the blessings, if you're not eating bread, starts with what do you desire first on your plate? Do you want the vegetables, the fruit, the meat? What is it you really want from your plate? That's the blessing you say first. That confuses people because they're taught an order of the blessings that's different than that, because every person has a different order of what they desire. But now you come to a sandwich, which is a mixture. The rabbis say it's not a mixture, it's the bread, so you wash and say hamotzi, and the berkat hamazon. The reason behind why they're saying that is they want people to say as many blessings as they can for the benefit of the person. But there are people who are in a hurry when they're eating a sandwich, and they literally think in terms of it's a mixture, that it's a blessing of sha'akol, because you don't know what item it is. And therefore, you don't have to wash and say hamotzi and so forth. That's a minority opinion, but it gets confusing about which blessing to say when and how. Are there any other questions? Have I answered all of your questions?
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
Any other questions? Okay. Classes are coming up. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock is the Zohar class. We're going to read the second section of the Zohar on the Parsha of Ekev. Saturday night, we're going to connect to the new energy of the week. And there is no Zohar portion on the Parsha of Re'eh. And we will discuss why that is Saturday night at 8:30. 10:30 Sunday morning, we begin our preparation for the High Holidays by studying Teshuvah again, still, because we always need help with Teshuvah. 5 o'clock Sunday afternoon, we will be dealing with the basic class, the sixth of the basic class, which is Binding by Striking, Part 2. 7:30 will be our fourth class. No, excuse me. 6:30. All times are West Coast times. 6:30 will be our fourth class on the Tree of Life. Monday at 7 o'clock, we will have a Hebrew letter, the letter Tet. My mistake, the letter Yud. Tuesday at 7 o'clock is our Advanced Reincarnation class. And I believe it's the class number 62. Then Wednesday next week, we will again have the discussion of the questions and answers, if whatever you might want to discuss. That's what this session is all about. Everyone have a beautiful week.
Thank you.
Good night. Shalom. Lila Cove. Night.